Greetings, my brothers and sisters. Sending gratitude to all of you who are joining in today to accompany us down the rabbit hole of self-exploration through plant medicines. My name is Ryan Sprague, and I'm here to tell you that your frequency is now set and tuned to explore psychedelic medicines and the impact they've made among the countless psychonauts exploring the last true frontier. Buy a ticket and take the ride with me as we get true first-hand accounts of the experiences, benefits, risks, and transformations taking place within the ever-expanding world of psychedelic medicines on This One Time on Psychedelics. One of my absolute favorite aspects of podcasting is the art of conversing with like-minded individuals, as for me, opening up a dialogue that the destination of which is unknown can allow for spontaneity and curiosity to ripple into our lives. And for me, the mystery of life is what I love most about this experience we call life. In today's episode, our returning guest and I do just this in opening up an off-the-cuff deep dive into what is currently fascinating us most about life and all the facets within it. Our guest today is the host of the Expanding Reality podcast, and along with being one of my favorite souls in the universe, is a man whose mission is to, as his podcast name suggests, expand the reality of as many humans as possible to help them come back to the beauty which is the mystery of all that which we do not know in life. In this episode, we dive into many different topics, including one of his upcoming events and one which I am super excited for, which is the Befriending Bigfoot excursion, along with many other aspects of his life that he is currently fascinated by. So come take a journey into the unknown as I welcome my man Brandon Thomas back onto the show. Brandon Thomas, you handsome man, I am so excited to be joined with you here today. And as I said in the intro, we're going to be getting into some fun stuff today with the Bigfoot expedition that you were leading and just so many fun things, dude. And when you told me about that, my inner child went on fleek. And for everyone that tuned in to last week's episode with Drew Banky, you know, it's been amazing connecting with individuals like Drew and Brandon because they really bring my inner child out, like exploring abandoned buildings, hunting for or going after Bigfoot. I wouldn't say hunting him, but, you know, going to meet Bigfoot and all these amazing things, man. So give me an update, bro. What's been going on in your world? Tell us about the Bigfoot expedition and we'll start riffing on all this fun stuff.
Dude, it's been absolutely insane. And it's so cool to see you. And yes, this is the inner five-year-old shit, you know, and I was thinking about this the other day. I was like just walking around my art studio in the back where I make these books and all this kind of stuff and walk around the studio and seeing all the cool shit and people send us art and, you know, signed copy of their amazing books that I like can't wait to read and all this stuff. And I sit there with my inner five-year-old and I'm like, dude, look around. You know, there's no mom telling you that you can't have a comic laying right there or that, you know, you have cartoons on in the background. That's stupid. Or that, you know, the art people are sending you and that things you're interested in and, you know, all those things. So like our inner five-year-olds are constantly doing this. And we live in a world where it's becoming safe for our ideas to grow. And that's what you and I facilitate for folks. We're giving people back to themselves and creating an environment where it's safe for our ideas to grow. And in this way, we can really explore and have fun. Now, we've been doing this for a few years on Zoom now, you know, with the show, and it's just gone amazing. It's global. Mm-hmm. Things are amazing. But now we're ready to get amongst them. And so I will actually just go ahead and share the screen here. Dude, I can navigate Riverside on the fly. Mm-hmm. And I will go ahead and let the audio-only audience know down there in the show description that that's where they can find the link for the video version so that you can check this out with us. Oh, this may have done this a couple times. So on our website here, expandingrealitypodcast.com, our main page will link you to a series of things. One of those is our events page. And so we're just going to start there specifically. Now, we do multiple things. We have the podcast. We have our publications, which is the books you see in the background here. Those are journals that I hand-did. We have seven of those in published right now. And I believe, Ryan Sprague, your voice is in a couple of those for us, and we're grateful for that. The excursions event, though, that we have, and what I was saying about getting amongst them, you know, getting out from behind the screens here, and you've been doing this, man, with your events, and you already understand the value of getting people together, especially like-minded people. And one of the things that we figure out early in this game, if you want to say that, is when we start connecting like this, we all realize, oh, you're way over there, and I'm way over here, and you're way over there, and oh, there's no one really that you're aware of consciously in your immediate area that's like you. And it's fascinating how we all seem to have, you know, you grow where you're planted, right? So cannabis metaphor, absolutely. But it seems that now we have detected that we all grew, just to stick with the metaphor, in shit, right? Trauma, like your upbringing, your education system, the politics you were raised in, your parents, you're probably the black sheep. I'm going to go ahead and venture out to say, right? Mm-hmm. All these things. And so you grow where you're planted, but that's a fertilizer of shit but you grow best in shit, right? And so we grew to be these tall, amazing flowers out of this myriad of fertilization that we got through this trauma and whatever. And now we're able to uproot ourselves and come together as these beautiful flowers, to stick with the metaphor, and kind of create a cool garden together at these beautiful locations. And so one of the things we're doing with this is this Befriending Bigfoot event, which is what we're going to be doing here. And that's the whole point. You nailed it, Ryan. We're not hunting anything. We're befriending the motherfucker. So on our website here, you're going to get to see all the information. And I'm going to come back to the site because we're going to go check out the place in a second. But the plantainary is all up. This shows when things are going to be going down, how it's going to happen, what our presenters are. We do have 2-hour presenter blocks each night that will be streamed live on YouTube if we're still welcome there, or at some platform. We'll announce that. And then in the evening as well, the place that we have butts up to the Chattahoochee National Forest, which is thousands of acres. So technically, our backyard is as big as you can walk it. And we have, you know, like Trey Hudson's going to be bringing his night vision and FLIR camera stuff out the first night. And we're going to go on this really cool adventure hike through the hills. And we've been out there. It's amazing in North Georgia. Then the next day we go hiking in Booger Alley, which is a secret location by two of our first presenters, Sheila and Scott Granger, the night before. They're going to talk to us about all kinds of stuff in that area, scare the shit out of us. And then we're going to go hike around at night. And then we're going to go see this really cool place the next day. Again, amazing presentations. We've got comedy. This Owen Hunt is amazing. He's got a comedy sketch where him and a few of his friends actually are going to come do a whole hour. And then he closes it out with a really cool thing where he dresses as Bigfoot and roasts humanity from Bigfoot's perspective. So it's all there. It's all perfect. We have filmmakers. We have Alexander Petikoff. We're also going to be hiking in 3 different states. We've got Georgia, Tennessee, and North Carolina. We've got kayaking in Tennessee, as well as a hike out there, as well as we're going to do sort of a drop off on the AP trail, hike to a certain spot, get picked up in North Carolina, as well as presenters that night as well. I mean, Preston Dennett, Les Durant, like all these amazing people. The next day, of course, Sunday, to wrap it all up, we're going to go to the Bigfoot Expedition Museum, run by a guy named Dave Bacara in Blue Ridge, Georgia, which everything's just sort of right there. And all, you know, transportation and stuff's provided. So we have all that covered. And it's got a DNA lab, the largest, you know, cast prints of anywhere on the planet, like just a really cool world famous oddities museum. And we know the guy that runs it out there, and we're going to go check that out. So all this really cool stuff is happening with this. It is in a beautiful location, Blairsville, Georgia. It's fuck all for anything. It's like out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And it's beautiful. Like I said, you can book now. There's all these book now tabs will take you over to our Ticket Spice page, which anybody who's been using Eventbrite, I have a switch for you. So let's peep the spot real quick, and then we'll move on from this because we have other cool shit to talk about. But I just wanted to show where we're going to be hosting this event at. This place called Sugar Boo Farms, already adorable, and we love it. Dude, the Sugar people Boo are Farms, incredibly, bro. I know, the people are incredibly cool and sweet to work with. And so let's just go on a little bit of a tour of, let's see the grounds first. Now this, we have all these little cabins out here on the grounds, of course, you know, are seated in this beautiful Smoky Mountains here, the Southern Appalachians. And it's just got this myriad of amazing options that we provided, even all the way down to camping. So if you don't want to stay in one of these things, or if you want to, you know, semi-private options, we do have available as well. So we've done this in a myriad of ways to be as accommodating as we can for this, you know, exclusive event. That's the other cool thing about this. I was speaking to one of our presenters who does events and goes to conferences and things like that the other day, and he said, so this is unique in a different, he was asking, he said, so do we have a booth or a table or something like that that we can go set up at? And I said, honestly, no. I said, that's sort of counter to the whole point of this. This is your stage. I go, you're going to be sort of a free range presenter. Think of it that way. That really, it's going to be you, yes. And we're all going to hear what you have to say during your presenter block, which is awesome. But also, you know, we want to hear what you, Dave Zed, Chris Matthew, and Alexander Petikoff think about the same questions that we have, right? So this is an opportunity for everybody to get together and to say, you know what, I want to know what all of these folks' perspectives, and as well as like, how do you take your coffee? You know, we're sitting out on the back deck of this in the Smoky Mountains in the mornings. We're preparing for a beautiful hike, and you've got Trey Hudson sitting there, you know, telling you a story about the South Skinwalker Ranch, his famous location that I signed an NDA saying that I wouldn't reveal the location of. So of all this crazy shit going on out there. So you get all these wonderful opportunities to actually be in an intimate perspective with these folks. And you really get to sit under these two chairs with your favorite author and have him sign a book for you and talk to him about it. And they're going to love it. Like, that's the point of this, is this, it's get amongst them, man. There's no like isolation. Oh, I've got a badge, so you need to only talk to me through my agent, or if you've bought a book, or if you go to this table and then it's isolated because Richard Dolan's not over here with this guy. And even so, they wouldn't, you know, do it after their presentation. They're in and out, which is, there's no hard feelings on that style of conference. It's got its place, and that's amazing. In what I'm looking forward to in this, and this is just, you know me, man, it's what we bring, the original, the original, the different shit, is the idea that we can all get together, intermingle. Yeah, dude, go play your set, and then let's go fucking hike on woods. You know, it's very nature-centric. It's very, let's hear what you have to say. You know, we want people to share their experiences as well. And it just attracts a really interesting set of folks. So this is sort of our presentation area. They have a massive pavilion as well, if weather doesn't hold. But this is where we plan to do this thing at. And it's got a three-level step down that we're working with here that at night, this projector screen comes alive. So you can picture our presenters here. We also have music. We're going to be doing jam sessions. I'm bringing my guitar and all that. So you can picture, you know, just sitting up here on the fire, listening to Trey Hudson or Alexander Petikoff or Preston Dennett or anybody else give a presentation here. Or you could be down in the pool or the hot tub and you get access to all of this. Then your little cabin's down here in the infinite woods around. So also a big UFO component to this, I will say as well. Les Durant, Dave Baker, a few of these other, Preston Dennett, especially this author has written like 50 books on the subject. They'll all be out there and we'll have cameras and things set to the skies to catch anything that that we got going on out there. Dude. So, Ryan, I could talk about this forever, and you and I could absolutely spend more time on this, but if there's any questions or anything, I'd love to go over them, but especially, guys, just wanted to point out just expandingrealitypodcast.com/events if you want to go there straight. If you do want to go home and check out all the cool stuff as well, this is a complete repertoire of how to find the show, how to find our publications, which again, Redigional Publishing is our publishing house, and we've got all of our journals now up on both Amazon and Barnes & Noble, which we were very excited about. My wife, Mary, really was instrumental in that. So again, I could talk about this forever, bro. So,
dude, this is the coolest thing ever. Like when you told me about it, I was like, dude, I've never felt so much like this is where I parked my car, you know? And it's funny, man, because a couple of weeks ago, I have a good buddy. He's been on the show before, Eddie Madden, who's local to Boston. Dude's hilarious, man. Like I'll have to connect you to. He's a big Czechie. You know, he's been in the Czech world for a long time. And we met at the dispensary when I worked there through a crazy synchronicity, which I can get into a little later. But the funny thing was we have this ritual called hot dog parties where he'll hit me up and just send me a picture of a bunch of hot dogs. And he'll be like, hey, man, it's about time. And he's got a thick Boston accent. And so we always say when the girls are away, the boys will play. So his girlfriend, my girlfriend, they're friends. And so when they're doing stuff, we'll hang out at his house and he'll get us like, you know, the nicest organic hot dogs. He's an incredible chef. And so we'll just hang out. We'll hit some bags. We'll watch conspiracy videos and we'll just eat hot dogs, dude. It's like a hilarious ritual. So I go over there and he's sharing with me about this guy, Bob Gimlin. You ever heard of Bob Gimlin before?
It sounds so familiar.
Dude, you would love this guy. So what he does is he creates illustrations and he's a storyteller surrounding stories like Bigfoot, different types of like monsters and different types of like interesting, weird, psychedelic type events that are going on. And he's got this one that I listened to. It's like 35 minutes long and it is wild, man. It takes place in the early 70s, I believe. And these two kids, they go into the woods. They find two of their other friends out there. And they all decide to camp in the woods that night. So they go back to their house to grab their sleeping bags. And when they come back, they can't really find their friends. It's too dark, you know? So they decide to set up just kind of like wherever they can. So they set up their little tent. And as soon as they set it up, they hear one of the other kids, the older kid that was with their other friend, starting to yell for the other friend. And they're like, what the hell? What's happening? They come out of their tent and this kid's freaked out. And he's like, hey, man, like, I forget the guy's name. We'll just use Bobby as an example. Bobby just got taken by something, right? And so they're getting really nervous about it, obviously. And they're freaking out. They're hearing all these growls in the woods and whatnot. Basically, what ends up happening is Bigfoot or whatever this, you know, creature is, doesn't hurt the individual. He's just trying to play with him. But the parents, like basically there's a little child Bigfoot who's still like, you know, 4 feet tall. And then there's the parents. And the child is the one that grabbed Bobby thinking that like they're playing, right? So they weren't trying to hurt him. They just, you know, Bigfoot obviously are like very strong beings, you know? So like what is tumbling for them could be like damaging to a human. So
like
basically,
mice and men.
Yeah, exactly. And so the next day they find their friend Bobby and he won't say anything that happened. He's like just straight shook from it. And then the story continues that a couple of days later, one of the original kids from the original house that went into camp, they go over to their other friend's house and the nanny says, oh, so-and-so's out in the cornfield playing with a troll. And the kid's like, trolls? So like, he's a kid. So he's like, oh, he's playing with trolls. So he runs down to the cornfield and he sees this kid with all his toys spread out. And he's just talking to the corn maze, basically, right? And so this kid's probably like, what the hell? So he goes down there and this kid tells him like, yeah, there's a troll in there and I've been playing with him. And the kid's like, yeah, right. Well, all of a sudden, the arm pokes out of the corn maze and this kid realizes like, oh my God, there's a real creature in there. So they start playing. I think his name was Michael, the small Bigfoot, because basically that was actually the friend's name that got lost, was Michael. So when they were yelling Michael, this Bigfoot learned the term Michael. So he was responding to the term Michael. And so they stayed out in this cornfield all day playing with this guy, making him laugh. He was saying Michael. They were laughing. When they laughed, it made him laugh. So they were having this like fun little interaction. And then later on, one of the original kids, he goes back to his house. And one night his parents are watching TV and he gets bored watching TV. So he decides to go out of the barn. And so it's like sunset. He goes out there and he's playing in the barn and he hears the door open. Like the garage door or the farm door. He thinks it's his parents. So he looks up and it's Michael, right? The small Bigfoot. And so at first he's a little like, kind of like, you know, scared about it. But they start mirroring each other. So this kid will say something and the Bigfoot will mirror it. So they're playing, right? And all of a sudden, this kid decides to beat his chest, right? Now, what he didn't realize is that that might be something that's a mode of conflict or like a sign of conflict. So when he does this, the little Bigfoot does it the same way. But when he does it, this kid gets really freaked out because when he does it, he starts really banging his chest and all of his teeth come out and he starts seeing all these layers of teeth and he gets freaked out. Now, the Bigfoot, again, was not trying to hurt him. He was just playing, but he doesn't, you know, he just took it a little too far. So this kid tries to run and he screams. And the small Bigfoot, this is like, you know, he's talking about this as it goes. He says, like, in hindsight, he thinks that the small Bigfoot knew he wasn't supposed to be playing with humans. And he was afraid that the scream would alert his parents, alert like the Bigfoot parents. So the small Bigfoot jumps on top of him, pins him to the ground and does this weird type of sound thing that paralyzes him. But it doesn't just paralyze him. It actually makes him calm down and like not feel afraid anymore. But then what happens is as he's on the ground, he sees the mom and dad Bigfoot. And that's when he gets kind of freaked out. Now, at this same time, his mom and dad heard the scream, looked out the window and saw a bunch of what they thought were bears running towards the shed that he was in. So they run out there. His dad runs out with a shotgun, runs out there and sees like this happening, right? Like sees like the small Bigfoot on top of him, sees like the dad through the window, and he decides to like shoot in the air. And they all kind of run. And then they're in the garage now. And the mom or dad Bigfoot grab the gun and they're wrestling with the gun, right? And so they eventually end up outside. And Michael still thinks this is playing, right? He still thinks like they're all playing. So he's trying to run at them. And then like when he does, the dad will like shoot in the air, he'll run off. But he knew, he's like, I'm not trying to hurt them because God forbid if I do hurt their son, like, first of all, I'm a dad, I understand that. But second of all, like, they're going to annihilate me if I do that. So like, that's basically the gist of the story is they eventually get back inside. And it's just a wild story, man. But like, he has a bunch of stories like that on there that are like very, very accurate in terms of like how he tells them. And again, like, you know, stories are stories, but these are all based on true events. And it's pretty wild, man. It's pretty wild.
I'm like blown away, dude. That's one of the most fantastic things I've ever heard because you get so emotionally involved in it. You just, you can understand how all of it could be seen from any of the perspectives, but how also any instance of, I guess, reaction or action would have been justified from a perspective. And some would say that the dad even showed a lot of restraint and, but you know, maybe it was dominated by fear that, yeah, dude, I could take this thing out, but man, I'm going to get fucking mauled by everybody and all of us. So let's just kind of triple think here. But the sound part of it is so fascinating because this element of the phenomena, whatever it is, part of its mystery is its ability to subdue you or its ability to perception manage the way you view it and interact with it. So there's really an interesting, if viewed through either measure, it's either because from our perspective, we're being apprehended at the conscious level to where it's almost like a sleep paralysis is involved in this as well, to where you really feel like you have an immobility, where you have an unconscious desire to move, but you have no physical ability to do so. And that's fucking terrifying, dude. Absolutely terrifying. You could see from the phenomena, did you hear that? From the phenomena's perspective, that maybe it needs to subdue such a violent and reactionary being, you know, because if you think of it's inherently, dude, if a Bigfoot just showed up, who knows what anyone would do, right? A lot of people say, I, you know, was going to do this and oh man, I go hunt them all the time. And then when I finally saw one, I froze and I couldn't get my camera and I couldn't any of that. And, you know, there's an element of reverence to this as well, sort of a respect, a mutual just, hey, you know, they call it anthropomorphic fusion. And it's where basically your anthropomorphic fallacy, that's what it is. An anthropomorphic fallacy is where we sort of give the same traits of humanity over to something else, or we sort of say that they would obviously treat the situation the same way we would. But in this case, there's so much overlap and empathy in how the situation played out. But also, I find the freaky woo-woo element, or this, again, you know, because then one wouldn't call it supernatural, because this is, from anyone's perspective in the situation, just a natural element. It's a biology at that point. And they just happen to be able to do this, just like a cuttlefish can change its shape or form, or any other mimicry in nature. It's just an adaptation quality, right? And there's a really dear friend of mine. I'll bring his perspective into this because it was so fucking fascinating. There's a dear friend of mine named Asher. Shout out Asher. He is just a pen pal of mine from Canada. He started writing into the show and he started writing these mind-blowing. He is saved on my phone as a mind-blow emoji, Asher mind-blow emoji. So every time he sends me something, it's like that. And when it came to Bigfoot, he just happened to mention on another rant that he was on philosophically, I'm just blown away by this. I told him we're going to put them all together in a book. But he was talking about Bigfoot specifically, just kind of went on this amazing rant and just goes, oh, by the way, I think Bigfoot, one consideration could be that it operates exclusively out of the right hemisphere of its brain. And if you think about this, you think about a creature operating in nature on specifically one paradigm, on one dualistic thread, but they are wholly invested in that thread. It's a fascinating thing to think about, because then to them, the physical limitations of the left brain and logic and things don't play in. So of course they can vanish in and out. Of course they could just do whatever. Of course they can put you to sleep with their mind, because it's not a limitation for them. You find a lot of limitation in the left brain. And so if a creature is operating exclusively in one paradigm or another, it's fascinating. And there seem to be the lizard turds that operate exclusively in the left, right? And we find an incoherence or an imbalance. But then there are all these fascinating things about nature that then when anthropomorphized, not falsely, could then say, well, shit, I mean, maybe this is just simply an adaptation in the polar opposite of what's, you know, seen in our known, air quotes, universe. But even that part of it's real gaslit. I think that that's for a reason. I think it's ability to apprehend and be mysterious, and its consistent inconsistencies are what's so tantalizing about it, man.
Oh, absolutely, dude. I mean, you said it perfectly. And, you know, for me, it's like, I think that your ability to have imagination, because again, right, like, you know, if you look in the mainstream, Bigfoot's not real. It's not true. There's no way they would have been able to survive this long without people noticing them. But at the same time, like, why are there so many stories that are so similar across the planet? I don't know the answer, right? But that's what I love most about life. When you start hearing one thing of like, nope, that's not real whatsoever. But then you start hearing a bunch of other opposing truths, right? Or opposing opinions, rather. And you get to be stuck right in the middle where the mystery gets to encompass you, right? And that's why it's like befriending Bigfoot. It's not meeting Bigfoot, because we don't know, right? Like, we don't know if we're going to get to sit down and get to, you know, we're not going to podcast with him, right? But at the end of the day, you know, it's like, if we remember when we were children, you know, there was a certain point where I realized Santa Claus wasn't real. It was like when I was 6 years old. But I still, I didn't tell my parents I didn't know, because I enjoyed the adventure. I enjoyed the mystery, and I didn't know for sure. And there was always something in the back of my mind that was like, well, how do I really know? And at the end of the day, I think that the biggest thirst trap in society is thinking that we need to know things, or thinking that we should know things, or thinking that we do know things, because there is no objective reality. We actually don't know nearly as much as we think. Like, at the end of the day, we're on a planet hurtling through what we are told is space. And one of the best ways I've heard it described is that it's almost like we all woke up on a ship and we're all like, all right, we're going this direction. Why? I don't know. We're just going that direction. Oh, how do we control this thing? And we're all trying to figure out why we're here. But the powers that be, mainstream, whatever you want to call it, they're really having us believe that, like, well, you're just born here to pay taxes, which if we talk to Brandon, you don't even need to do that, but just to pay taxes and die. And for me, I don't want to live that reality. I want to live a much more magical reality. And I don't care if I'm right, wrong, whatever. I just enjoy it. And that's the biggest thing, is you got to go to where you enjoy, because when you do, you'll have wild occurrences happen. You know, one of my buddies, Jordan Chartier, a really good buddy of mine, one of Eddie's business partners, actually. And we all sit around and we tell different, you know, stories of different things. And he, man, has one of the craziest stories out there. So He grew up in a town called Brockton, Massachusetts. Actually, it's where that guy, I Like the Stock. You know that guy? The GameStop guy? I forget his name. But in like 2020, you know how they drove the price of GameStop up? This guy, Keith, that was his name. Keith something. He's actually from Brockton as well. So that's like the one mention people might know of Brockton. But basically, Jordan and his brother, older brother, were out dirt biking in like the woods one day. And they were racing. And they turn a corner and Jordan's like, dude, you're never going to believe me. This is like the most ridiculous story. Everybody's like, I'm telling you, dude, I was young. I wasn't on any type of drugs. Like, and my brother saw it as well. They turn the corner and they legitimately see a Star Fox being, right? With like the Star Fox head, get up, look at them, and then just take off running. And they freaked out and went back to their house. And so we started looking up and actually, in like the intergalactic species encyclopedia, if you will, there is a species that is like a Star Fox type species, right? That are like dressed in like these almost like astronaut suits and they have a Star Fox head. Yeah, dude.
Is this it?
Yeah.
Like Craig Campobaccio? Is it,
dude. Yeah. The extraterrestrial species almanac. Yeah, dude.
Absolutely. Shout out.
Yeah. It's amazing, dude. So it's like, you know, I know that I've had really weird occurrences in my life. Like, you know, at the end of the day, I think that for any of us that have been connected with psychedelics, any of us that listen to this show, right? Like, I think we can all agree there's a lot that we do not know. And also, like I said, that's the best part of life. I don't want to know what I'm getting before I open my Christmas presents on Christmas morning. You know, I want to be completely surprised. And that's like the ideology that I lead all of my life from. I don't like to make answers on things. I just like to go, well, this is what's right for me right now, but it could change tomorrow. Who knows, you know? But when I think about Bigfoot and ETs and all these things, it just allows me to jump for joy because it's so much mystery and I know that I'll never know the answer. So I can release the left brain trying to figure out what the answer is and just enjoy the right brain experience of it.
So fascinating. One of the biggest challenges here is for logical folks, and I think guys, you know, and this is not a sexist comment. This is just dudes, you know, think in very logical terms. Women follow their heart and intuition, which is two dualities of a balanced perspective. Mm. And so, dudes, you know, we tend to overanalyze and we tend to lead with our intuition and logic. And logic will get you very far in this place, but it gets you to the point of really discovery of paradoxes. Now, the challenge with engaging intellectually in paradoxes is you have nowhere to go. You're stuck. And so from there, you must lead with your heart. And so if you can then get in your heart and then really get balanced and intuitive focus and guidance and really dial that in, that's where the guidance through the paradox kind of gets you, you know? And so I used to get to these maddening intellectual perspectives because, you know, I mean, dude, we go meta on this shit, you know, the shape of the world, the fucking reality of all of it, what you are, you know, all this shit, right? And so when you go deep down those logical rabbit holes, you get a lack of empathy because it does get to a point intuitively to where it doesn't look like this place is in your favor, or it doesn't look like this is a place of benevolence with a benevolent God that's actually here for your benefit. Whenever you look through certain lenses in this intellectually, then you get to really challenging points intellectually where you as an entity just can't go beyond. And it's just... It's trying to figure out the game within the game, you know, but you can get to walls you bump up against, which is frustrating because then you find boundaries and limitations, albeit intellectual ones. Hmm. Now, what gets you through those intellectual barriers is this balanced perspective within your heart-centered space. And it's even weird for me to say it like that because honestly, as an intellectual person, I'm just like, ugh, it's kind of gross. But I get that I intellectually can still empathize with the fact that that is the logical way forward through paradox is to abandon the idea of logic, right? Yeah. So even intellectually, you can see this as being beneficial in the way forward. Hmm. It's a fascinating thing, man. And especially with all these stories, with everything like this. And what, again, I think it invites us to do is on a logical level, it baffles us, absolutely baffles us. And then on the next level, it shows us the limitations in our logic and that really heart is what leads you through that dark pattern forward with uncertainty. Hmm. And that's challenging for somebody who's intellectually driven, who's somebody who sees cause and effect, Newtonian, this and that. And man, that it's been one of the most challenging, that word faith, right? It's the one that I... usually we'll get to that part of the story and flip it off and go the other way. That's where religion lost me. That's where all these things lose me, essentially. I'm softening my perspective on that. I'm doing my best to soften my perspective on that, I will say. Mm. Because it is, I feel like, a limitation. It's a barrier. And I'm here to shed those and give people back to themselves. And if I find myself in this predicament, even logically, where I say, dude, you can simply abandon logic and get through this sea of uncertainty, it's even that's illogical. So again, it's you can see the spirals and circles. The only way to bust out of this is just trust. And it's really challenging, man. I'll be honest. It's simple, not easy. And yes, don't let anybody tell you it's easy.
Dude, 100%, man. You know, it's like as an intellectual, right? Like when it comes to intellect versus intuition, like you said, there's a perfect balance to it. And I know for me, one of the things that really brought this out of me and really allowed me, like my whole life, I knew there was something else going on or something more to the table. But for years, I had no context, right? I was in the typical matrix, the 3D realm, you know, around very normal people, right? And that's not a diss. It's just like people that aren't necessarily interested in these things. That's not their fun, you know? And so, you know, like for years I was in that. And then when I found psychedelics and cannabis and started watching Zeitgeist at a young age and all these things, yeah, I was like, oh, this is really fun. And when I, you know, years later looked into my human design, I remember I was getting a reading from my buddy Eric, and he finishes the reading with, yeah, bro, I think you're really here to be a button pusher. And it's funny because I've always kind of thought of myself like that, like not like pushing people's buttons on purpose. That's annoying. But like just living my life in a different way. You're very similar, right? I imagine many people listening to this show and your show are very similar. Living your life in a way that triggers people just by accident, right? Like you're not trying to, but like when you talk about getting out of income tax and getting yourself out of the system and connecting with psychedelic medicines and going on befriending Bigfoot excursions, like a lot of people will feel like frustrated at that, right? And the reason is because somewhere down the line, they've stopped allowing themselves to be enthralled in the mystery, to take charge of their own life, et cetera. And so in a perfect world, people like you and I, et cetera, the same way that happened to me, are meant to trigger people into a deeper sense of who and what they truly are, right? A deeper sense of realizing like, dude, you're here to have an experience, man. You're not here to get it right. You're not here to do the safe bet. You're not here to allow logic to lead this incredible experience, right? Logic's great. You know, logic is definitely a great tool, but it's meant to be in the passenger seat. You know, it's almost like if you look at those rally car racers, the mind is a great navigator, but it's not the great like actual driver. You know, the heart is meant to be the driver, but the mind actually figures out, all right, the heart wants that, but how do we make that happen? How do we translate that into the 3D realm so we can make it happen?
So your rally driver analogy is the perfect metaphor for this. That really locked everything in. Because if you think about it on a level, okay, and even intuitively, when we talk about UFOs, okay, one of the things that they talk about is this, that the craft must be alive. And the reason that they sort of come to these presuppositions is because of the functionalities, the way they move, the way they behave, okay, if they're craft at all. But one of the things that they talk about in human interface with machines, right, is like your steering or like pilots especially. And this is why they do like the Apache helicopter and the F-35, when you look in the helmet display, the helmet itself is like $35 million. When you look, the plane will react where your vision goes, because your mind to send signals, the challenge is the interface issue, is that from your mind to think of something, for it to travel the milliseconds that it does, which takes an infinite number of time as far as the universe is concerned, as far as efficiency standards that can be modeled, then that takes too goddamn long for that pilot to move his hand to react, right? And so intuitively, I love the rally car analogy, because yes, that dude knows the left and right's coming up, but he doesn't know how to react if there's a bunny in the road, or if a little cup is blown by, or something not on his map that he couldn't reason or logic occurs. And what happens in that then is human interface takes over faster than it can be reasoned with. You know this in your own reaction time. Like somebody throws something, you catch it real quick, something bad at, and you're like fucking awesome, right? You're like, yeah, well, there's an interface there that didn't need to be processed. And that's where you let that shit go. And that's what's so challenging, is because when you step in with your intuitive mind, you're halting the speed and the connectivity and the flow in which that process can occur. You're damming the river of flow just so you can stop it and look at it and analyze it as it's going by. Now, what's fascinating is you can't operate 100% in intuition, because this is fucking silly. You can't just delusion yourself into this. And I think the Satanists, and this is proven in the 90s, Satanists infiltrated the metaphysical community, New Age community, and introduced something called manifestation. And what that did, whether you're a practice it ever or it's become beneficial in your life or not, its roots originate from the Satanic Church's attempt to destabilize and imbalance this part of people who may have, you know, been onto something really strong and enlightening, but they're just a little gullible in a way. And so with this, what Satanists were able to do was destabilize the New Age community with this idea. What it did was is that it promoted inaction, right? It said that the more you work for something, or the harder you do, or any action you put forward towards a goal, will then be met with resistance in the form of, you're not going to get it because you're not doing it right. But what this promoted, again, was inaction. This promoted a sit down. This promoted too heavy in the feminine intuition guided realm of where nothing was actionable because no action needed to be taken. We're all one, inconsequential. You can spiritually bypass your way through this bitch and be fine. Mm-hmm. Again, there's a balance. You know, I think in there, and we've got so many great examples of what not to do, right? NASA's lying to you, but why? You know, the government's full of shit, but why? Like all of these things. But rather than spend time on the logic of like what's going down and break it down, and we do all that, but a navigational, perhaps, you know, boost forward would be to see that the merging of those two concepts is really the balanced middle way, this middle path that folks talk about. And we have so many disparate energetic ideals in our reality that it's interesting that we can look at them intellectually just to be able to balance them, because there seem to be so many camps, right? So many unbalanced things here. So to find balance in an unbalanced world is it possible? You know, what does that mean? You know, how does that function? What does that even look like? Because then at that point, any of it is subjective. Balance is subjective, you know?
Everything is subjective. Everything. You know, that's the funny thing, man, is like when you, and I know you get this too, like, but when you look into quantum physics, you realize like, oh, there is no right or wrong. Duality is a made construct in the mind. And for me, that actually allowed me to like, a lot. But I think a lot of people, it gets them really nervous, because if they're in an institutionalized religion or something like that, and they're very boxed in, and they realize like the box isn't real, and what even is a box? It's all different depending on what you think of it as. And it starts breaking their brain, right? But I think people that naturally like psychedelics and, you know, these kind of things, ETs, paranormal activities, things like that, I think people like us, we actually feel more secure when we start realizing that, because we start realizing like, oh wow, it's always been just let me choose what's in the highest alignment for me and not really worry about what anyone else thinks of it, you know, because not everyone's going to get it, and that's okay. They're not meant to get it, you know. It's not that they're wrong because they disagree with you. It's just that they have a different universe they live in, the YO universe, and you have a different YO universe that you live in. And it's funny you talk about manifestation, because, you know, this is a big thirst trap, you know, in the self-development spiritual communities, is that the idea is great, right? Like you visualize something you want, you write it out, you focus on it, awesome. But they're missing the other aspect of the equation. Like that might be the feminine aspect, definitely necessary. But the masculine aspect is equally necessary. And that is taking action. And that's why Paul Check speaks of a quote from the Quaker branch of Christianity a lot that says, pray and move your feet. Mm-hmm. And I love that saying, mm-hmm. because I think that for a lot of people, they think they're just going to sit there with crystals in their hands and their whole life's going to happen around them.
Chase, and not again, attract.
Yeah, again.
They're attract, like, not trace, right?
Exactly, exactly. And like, you know, again, I'm not dissing crystals or anything. It's just like, guys, you got to go show the universe and show yourself, because who is the universe? It's you. You got to show yourself that you deserve that, right? Like we were talking last night in Breathe with Cannabis about how if you, you know, people ask all the time, what's my purpose, right? Let me find my purpose. And at the end of the day, right, like there really is no one objective purpose for anyone. But at the end of the day, you know, when you really look into it, if you want to be a famous musician, right, and that's kind of your goal, and you're focused on, you know, playing on stage, and you're visualizing playing on stage and playing with insert your favorite musician here, and, you know, having the crowd cheer you on, and you're visualizing all of that, but you don't pick up the guitar each day to practice, you don't practice singing, you don't do those things, well, how are you ever going to reach that macro purpose if you don't practice your micro purposes each day, which is practicing the guitar, chopping wood, carrying water? You got to do that for a long time before you have a house that you can actually live in. You know, if you just visualize the house, it's not like the universe is just going to build the house for you. You still have to get the house built. Now, maybe you end up manifesting a lot of help to build it, right? Whatever, but it's not just enough to just visualize, you know. So I'm glad we are bringing this up, because it's a real near dear challenge. A lot of clients I work with.
You got to do it. And the killer, I think, and you nailed it with this, the YO universe. And then when we talk about consensus reality and the subjective nature of this world, I mean, even in court cases, witness testimonies are the most unreliable in court cases, because there's two people, you and I standing right there, could see the exact same series of three events happen, we will describe them completely different. So how do you take anybody's perspective of anything as anything? I think it's a fascinating piece to add to your puzzle, and for you to kind of say, oh, wow, this integrates with my perspectives in this way, or I'm moved beyond this perspective because I can see it in this way, or any of those things. Now, where I think this gets its biggest hang up is in the word beliefs, man. There's a beautiful quote, and I'm sure I've shared it here and on many places. I share it as often as I can. In a movie Dogma, 1999, I believe, Kevin Smith, by a character called Rufus, played by Chris Rock. On the train, when he's talking to the last scion there, he is saying that he has ideas, not beliefs, because ideas are easier to change. And my God, this is fundamental, crucial. This is foundational. Because when we talk about, again, beliefs, I see this like ascension process or this sort of ability to transcend current paradigms, release what no longer serves, and ascend to a greater vantage point. Now, we use these terms in sort of spatially, but they're not hierarchical. They're simply chosen options of experience. Think of it like a pilot, okay? When he's flying, if he wants to fly at 5,000 feet, he flies at 5,000 feet. If he wants to, and he gets a certain experience, you get a certain wind disposition, you get certain weather, you get certain views of the ground. Now, if he wants to fly at 30,000 feet, then he gets a different temperament. He gets a different environment. You get a smoother sheen sort of approach. You get a higher perspective, meaning you're missing more. You're going by things faster. If you want to look at it on a micro level, but on a macro level, you're hauling ass in a smooth condition to do so. If that's your lane, then go for it. But I feel that you sort of surf in and out of these things like sine waves. Mm. And really the anchor to your altitude, what keeps you from ascending or even descending. Like, let's say you want to do something else. Maybe there's a part of your paradigm that just can't descend to a lower altitude because you can't bring yourself to physically kill something with your hands or something. That is a level of altitude that you're not able to achieve. And that's okay. And maybe it's at a certain above or below. Again, it's not hierarchical. It's just I chose this altitude. So let's say then that your beliefs, you're saying that God said this is everything that can happen, and I've read this book that tells me that, and out of the other 40,000 religions, they're not right. This one is correct for me. That's an altitude setting. That's a cruise control that you have fixed on. And anything going on up here where there's maybe opportunities to transcend that belief in a singular focus, they don't exist for you because you're not at that ability to perceive them. So again, when you look at these, again, sandbags on a hot air balloon, anything like that, you have a belief about your world. You have a belief about your God. You have a belief about your partner, a belief about self, a belief about whatever. And all of those things determine altitude. They determine all of it. They determine your ride. Now, if you are able to sort of cast them aside as easily as you do sandbags, knowing that they'll just be filled along the way and that it's not a limited resource and that you can adapt and change and grow and change your altitudes constantly, shed beliefs constantly, even more so, stop calling them beliefs, because beliefs is a whole inherent system in itself, meaning that you must adapt all that exists within this paradigm. And that may not necessarily be true. Think of it like people in Congress or whatever that are signing bills into law, where there's a bill in law and they're like, hey, this is the, if you litter, you should be murdered act or whatever. And like, everybody's like, yeah, okay, cool. Just don't litter. That's fine. And then everybody's down with that. But in the 4,000 pages that follow, there's a bunch of nonsense, man. But you got to agree to all that to make sure that literally doesn't happen anymore, right? In this way, then you adapt an entire sect, which always has limits, always, because you must exist within that paradigm. You've got to ride the ride. You got to put on the clothes. You got to speak the language. You've got to read those books only. You've got to all of that. And it's just limiting to the other options of experience. Now, rather that's this or that is right or wrong, I think that there's too many of those out here, options of experience, for there to be any one path. And so I think automatically you can sort of rule out the idea that you're fucking things up. You're not. Mm-hmm. And whatever you're doing, you're not. And then when you look at it like this, then when you start shedding beliefs or you start calling them ideas and just say, yeah, I had this idea that this was the way, but actually I'm going to introduce to a new idea that actually changed that completely. And I'm very interested in, for some reason, I can't stop thinking about, you know, and it's compelling and it's empowering. But if you allow that idea to go and move forward and grow, then that's growth. You're able to get in and out of these roundabouts real quick and change whatever altitude you want at whatever time. You're able to put on this perspective and that. And it's okay. It's not destabilizing. It's fucking enjoyable as shit, man. You don't have to kick it at one altitude, dude. You're all over the... You're doing barrel rolls and shit. You're going in portals and stuff. It's crazy.
Dude, you know what it reminds me of? Ram Dass's quote, that death is like taking off a tight-fitting shoe. Well, you know what else feels like that? Loosening your stories or your narrative or your identity around what you believe. Because again, you said it perfectly, man. Like, you know, at the end of the day, why would I want to box myself in? Like, that is exactly what I'm looking to get out of, you know? Like, when we are kids, we're not boxed in at all. And for most of us, hopefully we all had good upbringings, we can think back to like how freeing that was, how in the moment we were, et cetera. Now, again, I'm not saying that like, you know, having a logical mind, developing an ego, etc., are all negative. But it does introduce a interesting challenge, right? Because by the time we are conscious enough to be aware of what's going on in here, there's a chance that we've already been fragged, essentially, right? Full of malware. And so it can be really easy to allow that malware to get you deeper into the malware, especially because if you're surrounded by people, places, things, etc., that are influencing you in a negative way, and maybe you haven't met the right people or whatever, you can get really boxed in. And, you know, I think this is one of the big reasons we're seeing a lot of psychedelic renaissance stuff happen again right now, because I think people are getting to a point of surrender where they're like, nothing is working. The whole system is ass backwards. I mean, at the end of the day, white bread is on the food pyramid. Like, you know, there's the equivalent of that in every sector, right? When it comes to finance, health, spirituality, the whole thing. And I think that the more that people get boxed in, the less likely they are going to be able to actually live a full spectrum type of life. And I think that the more that we are able to identify these beliefs and break them, the more that we're going to be able to, in the wise words of Honey Boo Boo, have a nice multi-meal, right? So I never watched Honey Boo Boo, but I watched one scene. And it was when she was talking about, right? It was when she was talking about how she loves multi-meals. It was her mom, actually, I think June or whatever. It was her mom being like, yeah, we make multi-meals. And I remember I was a kid, remember like 17, 18 when I watched it. And I really liked the idea because I'm like, yeah, like, you know, let's put it in diet just to be a very easy, you know, analogy. It's like, there's so many of my friends that are like, dude, you got to do carnivore. There are so many of my friends that are like, dude, you got to be a vegan, right? And I'm like, why? Why can't I just have a steak with some vegetables? Like, why all this weirdness, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what fucking diet I have. That's not what I'm going to base my identity around. And let's say that maybe a certain point in my life, hey, my body's responding to meat better. All right, awesome. I'm going to go towards that. But if I box myself into, I'm a carnivore and this is who I am, and then my body stops responding to meat, well, now I either have one of two options. One, I can keep my identity and try to hide the fact that, you know, carnivore is actually hurting me because I don't want to change my identity. Or I can end up, you know, like allowing myself to actually go towards what my body is craving. And I think that's the perfect balance of that logic and intuition. Like, okay, I'm feeling like I'm going a different way. All right, let me use logic now to go to the store and try out some new foods based on what I'm feeling, go home, learn how to cook them and try it out. And I think that for me, I take certain things that I like from a Christianity type perspective. I take certain things I like from a Jewish perspective, like I love Kabbalah, but I'm not attached to any of it. I just think it's fun. At the end of the day, there's a kid I saw the other day saying, and he's like, he defrags a lot of these kind of things. He's like, listen, man, like, you know, he was talking about loving yourself. And he's like, loving yourself is fucking exhausting. He's like, you don't have to do it. And he's like, and also loving and hating yourself are pretty close together. You know, he's like, why do you always have to be focused on loving yourself when in reality, maybe part of your evolution is going through a period where you forget that you love yourself or you don't love yourself. And maybe that's part of your mission that you're going to teach later on. So if you're so focused on, oh my God, my belief system is if I'm not perfectly loving myself every day, then I'm going to burn in hell or I'm going to get cancer or any of these things. That's where a lot of the thirst traps in the spiritual realm come in. It's like, you're not meant to bypass it. You're meant to feel the feeling. And like a parent would console a child, allow them to feel it, feel seen, feel heard. And then when you've gone through that, then implant the thing that is going to allow you to move forward, you know? So I'm 100% in agreement with what you're saying, man.
God, this is just yes and all the way, which is really more of a reflection of what this world is turning out to be. You know, this idea of ubiquity, this idea of like that everything is the same or relative or anything like, or relatable and not relative is really interesting. Because in some cases, it can be observed and felt and witnessed, but in some, it just simply can't, man. And in all the things that you just said, this idea of experts, actually, I abandoned a long time ago. And my mom and I actually had this conversation my first year on the show. She said, well, you need to have some experts on your show that really know what they're talking about. And I go, what the fuck does that even mean, Mom? Yeah. I go, what do you mean expert? You mean somebody like that has been, that only read one book and that 12 other books that I think are really cool and could add to the perspective. He didn't, because he said, no, that goes so far against my upbringing. And I'm such an expert in this that it couldn't factor into what I already know. I'd say you're an expert in showing us where you've bookmarked that certain perspective in your life. That's a beautiful thing. And we can absolutely talk about that. But I'm not going to call you an expert on a specific subject because I don't think that exists, you know? I mean, and why would you want to be? Like, there's so much, how could you ever take that on? Like, the only thing I want here, dude, is to be a master of self and a curator of energies. And I think that with those two simple goals in mind, everything else just sort of falls into place. You know, I've got no desire to rule the fucking world. I've got no desire to change this place. I've got no desire to, like, I'm going to change it either way. Our influence is inevitable, just as our growth is, right? Mm. So whether you think it's a prison planet or that we're all one and we're all doing this together, growth is inevitable. Things change. You are going to evolve based on circumstances. You happen to learn in a particular way. Information is presented to you in a particular way, and you will fuck things up, air quotes, you know? And it's really about even alchemizing the way that we learn here. And I think society and all that, or whatever, which, you know, back to the beautiful quote, being well adjusted to a sick society is no measure of good health. That society really puts this idea that you do have a box that you're not living to the standard of, and that there's a box that exists and there's so many people in it, which no one's in, and that you should be fitting in, but you're not. And this is, I think, one of the biggest fallacies here, man. The biggest, because we're all unique. There's no speciesism here. I think it's really like we're all such a different genius of some crazy entity, and we're all merging together to just figure out each other's part. And then to what you said about telling somebody they're wrong and you're right, this idea is silly as fuck to me. The analogy I've given for a while has been that we all have our flashlights that can shine so far and that are tuned to a specific light frequency. Not everybody has the same flashlight. Not everybody is in the same part of this fucking cave, and not everybody is tuned to the same light frequency you are. So even if you're standing right next to each other, maybe you're combined flashlights, like the fucking National Treasure or some shit. You combine the frequencies and now you can reveal a new pattern. But then you hear someone from the other side of the cave yell, "Hey, I found this thing over here." And you go, "Bullshit. You're not over there. You don't have their flashlight. You don't know what the fuck they're looking at. How can you call bullshit on something in a part of the cave you're not even in?" So again, this idea of like even judging people who have had contact experiences and things like this, automatically writing them off. This is the biggest, like anyone would do themselves such a great disservice to be that limiting. I mean, so fucking limiting, right? So it's, again, when we embrace this idea that everybody's on their own journey, everybody's got their own truth, and then really run this idea of temporary truth. That's my one singular belief. I believe that this place is a myriad of fabric of temporary truths. You feel so strongly about something for a certain amount of time, enough to really explore it, and then move on. And if you're able to treat them that way, that's going to just exponentially expand consciousness like crazy. So when we cling to that little balloon called religion, or we cling to that little ideology of the five-year-old version of them that stuck back in a trauma because they drew on the wall and their mom yelled at them and now they won't be an artist, that, get rid of that. Like, that's an easy balloon to pop. Free yourself, dude. You know what I mean? It's just interesting because this is the new paradigm, man. This is the way forward. We're all here for each other.
Dude, 100%, man. You know, I could not have said it better. And it's so funny, man, because, you know, growing up, I was a metalhead and I used to argue with my friends on why metal was better than rap. And that's like one of the perfect examples of like, dude, neither of us were right. Neither of us were wrong. We were just right for ourselves and wrong for each other, you know, not necessarily in friendship, but just in terms of our opinions. But at the end of the day, why would you want someone to always be wrong or for you to be right all the time? Because if you're right all the time, you don't learn anything. You don't learn anything from being right. You know, you only learn things from potentially, quote unquote, losing or messing up, which doesn't actually exist. And I love what you talked about the expert thing, because, you know, if you're an expert, like, our words are vibration. They really matter. They architect the reality around us. And if you're getting told often that you're an expert, right? And people will say this to me, "Wow, you're a cannabis expert." I'm like, "No, I've just realized that I don't know anything about this plant more and more and more and more and more." And so my spectrum of how deep and wide this plant goes continues to get stretched. And I continue to get humbled by it. You know, I go through a complete transformation of how I've looked at this plant over and over and over again. But if you start to be called an expert, well, then you're probably not going to keep diving into that and actually learning about it. Like, a famous example of this is when I was growing up, probably around 10 or 11, I really started to want to be a musician. And my mom had this friend, Rick, who she had known since the 60s, who has been a musician for years, right? Drummer. And so she started hanging out with him again. And he was telling us about this place, the Yard Rock. It was this bar that on Sundays, they would have like a kids event, basically, kids, teenagers, et cetera, where they would allow like teenagers and different musicians to come out and do an open mic. And so we would go there, and there was this one kid, I won't mention his name just in case he ever hears this, but there was this one kid who was a really good, like, virtuoso drummer. He was 12 years old, incredible. He had been on David Letterman. Like, I mean, he was just rising really quick. But everyone always told him, "You're perfect. You're perfect. Oh my God, you're such a good player. You're so talented," all of these things. guess what ended up happening? He never ended up going anywhere, because when people would start to try to tell him, hey, you should do this, he had such an ego about it because his parents and everyone had told him for so long, you're doing it perfect. Don't let anyone tell you you're not. You're an expert. You're a master, right? And at the end of the day, it's like shamanism. You don't call yourself a shaman. You get called a shaman. And all of a sudden you realize, wow, I'm at that level. That's like what Hamilton explained to me, is that, you know, he's like, it's so silly people coming, you know, going around, you know, after they went to one Burning Man, calling themselves a shaman. Because when you're down in the jungle, you know, they don't even consider you to be a shaman until you've done at least 1,000 ayahuasca ceremonies. That's when they start actually looking at you, basically, and saying, okay, I guess you're actually serious about this. And it's usually not until around 3,000 or 4,000 that one day they'll just allow you to make the medicine and call you the word. And you're like, oh my God, right? So it's like these kind of things get bestowed upon you. When people call me an expert on cannabis, I'm like, not really, but thank you. You know, I understand the compliment you're looking to give me, and I understand where it's coming from, but there's always more to learn, you know, always, no matter what area of life it's about, there's always more we can learn. And for me, that was something that with my Virgo-ness, I had to find peace in. I had to find the middle way in, because there's a part of me that just like, oh, I won't stop until I've read every book. I won't even sleep. And I'm like, whoa, dude, you got to put that down, you know? So like you said earlier, life is all about balance. You know, it's like the reason I meditate every day and do breath work and whatever is not because I've been told it's good for me. It's because it's the only thing that keeps my mind in check from taking over and being like, oh, I've got to read every book and we're not good enough, blah, blah, blah. Like I keep that in check by that. It's a balance, you know? I like that part of me because it is the part of me that makes me go, all right, I got to crush 4 podcasts today. Let's fucking send it, right? So it's a good part of me. It's a good button to have. But once again, I want it in the passenger seat, not the driver's seat.
Dude, absolutely fucking nailed this, man. God, I love talking to you.
Me too, man.
I just love this. It's just so yes and again. It's just so yeah, dude.
Yeah.
And I really think that you nailed it on this as well. It's about being... They said and that's what's so interesting about the story that you told, is it's because it's so damaging in either way, where you set limits to the point where they feel that they're unachievable, but then also where you set a ceiling, meaning that, hey, you're already there. You've met it. Like there's nowhere to go from here. Mm-hmm. It's almost ensuring the idea of the one-eyed man in the land of the blind being king is the best option. In reality, there's a two-eye option. Maybe there's a third-eye option. Maybe there's like the where you can telepathic, you see realms and shit. So like this, again, sort of flatland perspective of this boxing in. But I think redefining words is what we've been doing a ton, especially in the work that we've been doing, and defining words and finding out what they really mean, and then really scrutinizing the etymologies and all of these things. So let's redefine two words here while we're here, expert and perfect, because I think these two, perfect, I've definitely talked about, but let's, inspired by this conversation, let's go into expert while we're here. So an expert in my mind, if you call yourself an expert, then that's an interesting way of presenting yourself first and foremost. That says immediately to me that there's probably a certain amount of reinforcement you've gotten in your reality based on the definitions that we're about to alter that have reinforced that paradigm, and why it doesn't resonate with me is why the definitions were formed in the first place. So let's just redefine. So an expert now, in my opinion, that I would really value is somebody that considers themselves to know very little in a field that they've studied their entire fucking lives and that have the most information from any perspective I've seen from mine and have an upward trajectory in which I can ascend in my awareness on that particular topic. If they can add value to it, awesome. But I think this idea of a finite ceiling to be achieved in any discipline is the issue. So if we then just alchemize that word and say an expert is really an alchemist in the sense that they're always evolving, they're changing, they're growing, they're learning, but they're aware that they don't know of everything. And that in that way, that is an expert I want to talk about. You're an expert in knowing a mastery of self and a curator of energies. Again, you're really invested into the idea that there's more to learn here and that you're on the hunt for it. Beautiful. That's that motivative, because then that's scalable in anything, right? That desire, like you said, to bang out 4 podcasts or whatever, that's scalable. Then if you look at it like from a perspective of perfection, so perfect is silly as well, because there's, number one, no standard of perfect anything, because then people say, oh, this person's perfect and they're Botox to shit and they're not their authentic selves and they're, you know, drinking constantly or just doing things that, you know, I don't find attractive or that I would find that. But hang on, but that's the perfection standard. That's the standard of perfect. That's interesting. So that is already a perception management campaign right there. They're tempting to make you feel that this and that's beneficial for them, not you. So if we can recognize that definition of perfect is unachievable, unattainable, and silly, then we can instantly rot off the expectations. That's beautiful. So already gone, guys. We're abolishing beliefs here. We're cutting sandbags and ascending like crazy. New altitudes, folks.
Weight reduction.
Yeah, weight reduction. That's it. Avi Loeb, had a conversation with him. Do you know that guy? Harvard scientist, no. Dude. Astrophysicist, Israeli scientist, Avi Loeb. He works. He did his office, our interview from his Harvard office. It's fucking fascinating. Anyway, sure. He's a dude that talked about the Oumuamua, the asteroid that was found, 2017 discovered, but he talked about this from a astrophysics big office and said, hey, it might be aliens or something. Mm-hmm. And so he had this fantastic analogy about being an eagle flying to a high enough altitude to where the crows couldn't pick at his back. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was fascinating because then, yeah, you don't have crows. You have smooth. So again, all these altitudinal reference points. But to perfection, I think perfection is, again, the same thing that we can apply to expert. They're right in there. I think, you know, you can anagram the words together. But there is an interesting point of reference in that, in which it's just that you know that there's evolution taking place, that there's temporary truths that you're interweaving in your life, and that those will change with new information if presented. And that's growth. That's perfect to me. That's perfect. So if we can just all collectively redefine those words together, then yeah, they would be accurate as to what we would like for them to be presented as, but not limiting in any way. So they're empowering now, and that's the alchemy in it.
Yes, we're taking the governor off of it. You know, it's yeah. Like when I was a kid, right? Like all my friends were like, let's take the governors off our engine so we can fucking fly, right? But we don't realize the analogy of how we put governors on ourselves, or we've had governors put on us before we were consciously aware enough to understand they were being put on us. But now we live in an age, especially entering the age of Aquarius, where it's time to take those governors off and full throttle send it, right? In whatever direction you want to go in. And I think that, you know, the saying perfectly imperfect is one of my favorites because it perfectly illustrates, right? Perfect. What we're talking about right here, right? Which is there is no perfect except for what someone believes subjectively is perfect. And even that belief is completely false because there is no standard of perfection. That's based on some type of ideology you've been trained to think is somehow good, right? For some people, perfect in terms of fitness is taking a bunch of steroids. For me, it's not. For some people, it's only doing yoga. For some people, it's being a vegan, right? Like whatever that is, that's great. Perfect. Like yes and. But at the end of the day, I think it becomes challenging, like we've been talking about, when people are unaware of the fact of the nature of the universe, that there is no right or wrong, like there's no duality like we talked about. And they start trying to push their definition of quote unquote perfect from their distortion onto someone else. And hopefully that person doesn't have an impressionable mind enough to start believing it. But again, like when we think about a lot of the childhood trauma we go through and things like that, that we become aware of later on, it's that our parents or, you know, guardians or society members, teachers, et cetera, you know, I don't think they intentionally mean to do us harm, but they're running a distortion as well. So they're just passing along the same distortion, the same governor that they've had put on them. And the more that gets passed along, at some point, someone's got to break it. And I think that what psychedelics and many other things do is to be able to actually just break them. And when you break them, you allow yourself to be more open-minded. And I think that's like, you know, to add on to what you were saying about being an expert. To me, like being an expert is someone who is open-minded enough to understand that, you know, they can talk the talk when it comes to something, but they have no idea that they know everything, right? They don't know everything. There's no point they're going to know everything. And they're open-minded because, again, some of the people that I've learned or had new perspectives on cannabis on are people that have only connected with it once or never. And if I was so much an expert that I felt like, oh, you've connected with it once, what are you going to teach me? Then I would have missed out on those things that someone who hasn't had all of this different time researching the plant, they are able to actually look at it in a way that I'm not specifically because I have a certain area that I've looked at, you know? And so the more that we are able to look at everyone in a way as an expert, so long as they're open-minded, I think that really allows it to get a little bit different, you know? So, yeah.
I love it, dude. You're absolutely right. And I love this. You're 100% correct. And this is just, it's always fascinating to get together with you and talk shop, man. This is what it's all about, these conversations right here. And this is the kind of thing, like I said at the event, guys, come on out. All the ways to book and everything are there. You can find it at expandingrealitypodcast.com/events. coming out with this. It's going to be insanely cool. There's only a 1% of it that I talked about today, but there's so many other cool things happening there. Yeah. So come check it out. But dude, love you. Love all of these conversations. Do a million more, dude. Thank you.
Hell yeah, bro. I got to have you back on all the time, dude. You, my buddy Jason Ganzouk, are like just repeat guests over and over. I got to connect you guys as well. I don't think you've met Jason
blow
yet,
it up.
Right?
Let's do a threesome here. And bro, let's just fucking
dude, let's get a three-way going.
I love it.
Brandon, I love you so much, man.
Love you guys.
You already went over where people can find you. I'll make sure it's all in the show notes for you guys. Guys, what I will say is definitely go check Brandon out. He is someone who allows my mind to continue to be expanded, or shall I say, shameless plug, he expands my reality to a level that is, in the wise words of Spinal Tap, to 11 and beyond. Make sure you check out Befriending Bigfoot. Make sure you check out the show. Make sure you check out everything this amazing soul is doing. He is one of the individuals that charges my battery more than anyone, and I am super excited for the next time we get to dive in. So wherever you are in the world, hope you guys are having the best day ever. Sending you all the love, and may the force be with you to infinity and beyond. Peace.